When you hear the words reinvesting into your business, what does that make you think about? Probably taking that money you earned and putting it into ad spend or buying more inventory for your product business or paying a marketing company to help you increase exposure for your business. But what about hiring employees? Hey, what is up, guys? Nick Nelbach here, and this is episode 57 of the 9-5 podcast, where we're going to be talking quite a bit about hiring today and hiring early on in your business. And today's guest to talk about this with us is Max Borges. Hiring is often thought of as a distant goal, especially if you're in the early stages of your business. But as you'll hear in today's interview, hiring even a part-time employee to help you pick up the slack and make up for your weaknesses might just be what you need to really scale your business. Max is the founder of a multi-million dollar marketing agency, and today he's going to be telling us how important hiring himself out of positions within his own business was, and how it's been a major key to the growth and scaling of his business to where it's at right now. And Max also shares some tips for those new entrepreneurs out there who have yet to start their business and how to get yourself started and moving in the right direction. Like usual, today's interview is packing a ton of value, so cut out those distractions, let's hit that intro music, and get into it with Max Borges. This is the 9-5 Podcast, and I'm your host, Nick Nelbach, where we get into the minds of entrepreneurs and people just like you so you can start, build, and grow your own online business. Okay, welcome back to the 9-5 Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Nelbach, and this is the show where we bring on entrepreneurs and business owners to help you start and grow your own business. And today we are going to be talking about a lot of different topics, actually. Today's guest, Max Borges, is here to talk to us about his marketing agency, how he's been able to scale this business and help a lot of major companies do the same. So, Max, welcome to the 9-5 Podcast.
Nick, great to be here. Thank you.
So, I'm really interested in all of your story because you've had a pretty awesome career. But why don't you give the listeners, before we get into all that, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of an idea of who you are and what it is you're actually doing?
Sure. So, you got my name right, Max Borges, and I have a public relations agency that works exclusively with consumer technology companies. So we help companies that make cool electronic gadgets get publicity on newspapers, magazines, on TV, on websites, just, you know, everywhere. We help make products famous, and I've had the agency now for 19 years as of this month. And we've got 45 employees and about 40 clients. And we worked with everybody from like Marshall headphones to AT&T to, Polar triathlon watches to, you know, all kinds of different cool products.
Yeah, that is incredibly impressive. But I would imagine it took a lot to get to that point.
It did. I started the agency kind of accidentally. I was looking for a job and couldn't get hired, but I got a company to give me some consulting, freelance work. And, I didn't know it, but that became the first client of my agency because I then realized that the work I was doing was only taking me about half the day, and I could go and look for maybe another client and make some more money. So that's what I did. And after a few months, I found my second client and got a small office, just like a little shithole that I paid $500 a month for. And I was really, really, really nervous. I remember, signing the lease, and it was like $525 a month. And I was, reading every word in the lease. It was a 1-year lease, and I was super, super nervous. And I had no idea that one day I would be paying as much as $50,000 a month in rent for my company. If you would have told me that, I would have, crap. But it was a humble beginning, but it was exciting from the start as well, because I was making money right from the very beginning because I didn't really have any overhead. With my first client, I was just working from my kitchen table with a laptop computer that I had. And, I funded my first little office with cash flow and bought a bunch of used furniture at this warehouse. It was all this like crappy furniture, but it was really, really cheap. And I was able to furnish the office again with cash flow, didn't borrow any money. And that's kind of how I, you know, run my business for 19 years. I've tried to keep expenses low and service clients as well as I could.
How did you end up getting that initial client? Did you already have some digital marketing or some kind of experience in the marketing realm before getting that initial client?
Yeah, I had some marketing experience in jobs that I had had before. And so I knew, you know, sponsorships, I knew marketing, I knew a little bit about advertising. I didn't really know much about PR. But you know, again, I was looking for a job and couldn't get hired, and I got that first client. So yeah, I leveraged my past experience and connections that I had, to get my first, bunch of clients. I think I had my first seven clients all came from personal contacts.
Oh, wow.
That I had. And I was really happy when I got my eighth client, because I thought, man, I'm running out of friends if I don't, figure out how to get clients that aren't coming from my personal contacts. I'm going to be very limited. But I was, you know, finally able to do that. And that was, that's when it really started to feel like, wow, now it's a business.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you hear all the time when people talk about starting a business or creating a product and selling the product, it's always like reaching out to friends and family, like first and foremost, seeing if you can get some stuff moving there. And then I feel like once you actually get someone beyond that, you're like, okay, this might actually be something that I can run with. This might be something that people actually want. I think that's so cool. But it goes, something that we've talked about quite a bit on this podcast is how important the relationships have been for everybody who's creating a business. Almost every guest that I've brought on has talked about the relationships and how if they didn't have the relationships and if they weren't building the connections that they have, they never would have gotten to where they're at. Do you think that that's true for everything that you have going on?
Yes, it is. It is true. And I think that it's important to be able to build relationships very, very quickly. In other words, you know, when you meet somebody, you got to be able to make contact very quickly, because you may not always have those relationships. And you know, some people say it's who you know, but I think it's also how quickly you can get to know somebody and how quickly you can build trust and how quickly you can convince somebody that you're a trustworthy person. And what I mean by trustworthy, I mean by someone who they can count on to do what they promise. And I think that when you can get that across, and I think that that's just something that I've always been pretty good at, is convincing people that I could do something that maybe I've never done before. And I think that really, you know, paid off.
That's really interesting. Okay. So now speaking of things that you're really good at, one question that I like to ask all of the guests that I bring on the show is, what is your superpower? And for anybody who's new to the show that might not know what I'm talking about, by superpower, I mean, like, what is that thing that you feel you crush it in this one area, or people come to you specifically for this one thing? It can be related to the business. Maybe it's not, but what do you think your superpower would be?
Yeah. I think it's one, convincing people that I could do things that I've never done before, that there's really no reason for them that I could do it, because it's something new. And, you know, ever since I was in my early 20s, you know, I've always been very, very fortunate that people have backed me and believed in me and trusted me. You know, when I had nothing, I mean, I didn't go to college, you know, and when I was younger, obviously I didn't have, you know, much experience in doing anything, but I think that that's really important. And I think that stems from having optimism and having self-confidence. I think when you believe in yourself and you believe that you can accomplish something and you can confidently communicate that to other people, then they'll believe in you as well. And so that's been, I think, a real advantage for me throughout my life in starting any business that I've started. And I've started lots of other businesses, though none of them have been as successful as, you know, the current one. But I was able to get a lot of things started and a lot of people to help me and support me, and people who I've learned from and you know, became my mentors in part because of, I think, that op and confidence that I've always had.
Yeah, that I was actually going to ask that, what you think the big winning formula was there. I think it's often very difficult, especially like a new entrepreneur, like entrepreneurship as a whole is, it can be a very lonely road to go down, especially if you're not very good at putting yourself out there, trying to build those relationships. If you aren't as quick about building the relationships, like you're talking, how important that is. So I think being able to find that self-confidence and know that, like, hey, I got this, or I can get this done, or if I don't know how to do this, I can get this accomplished. Is that self-confidence, is that something that always just came really naturally to you, or is it something that you kind of had to work on and kind of build up to?
When I was 19 years old, I read a book called Success Through Positive Mental Attitude by Napoleon Hill and Clement Stone. And that book really unlocked all of my personal power in an incredible way, because it showed me that I had the ability to accomplish anything in life, that I had control over my mind and my thinking and how I approach things, and that I could actually impact things that I thought were out of my control, that these things actually were in my control. And that is, you know, how people respond to me, and just really anything in life. And so I recommend that book to everybody. It's still available for like $7 or something on Amazon. So, but it's for me, that was a life-changing book, and it changed the trajectory of my life forever, because it also got me reading more self-help and personal development and business books. So I read a lot of business biographies, a lot of, you know, Anthony Robbins and Zig Ziglar and, you know, Brian Tracy and all these, you know, sales type books and trainers and self-help, and just learned a lot about the principles that make people successful, and applied those things to my life. And over time, I think those things, you know, allowed me to accomplish more and more and more.
I will, for everyone listening, I do have a show notes page for this episode, so stick around until the end and I will give you the link to that, where you can, I'll throw that link to that book in there. So if anybody wants to go check that out.
Awesome.
And any of the links that we discuss in this episode will be thrown onto that show notes page as well. So make sure you stick around to get that. So what was it like at the very beginning? Obviously, you said that you were bringing on a few clients at a time. Was it really nerve wracking, like going from, because you said you went to go looking for a job to start, and then you ended up with a client.
Yeah.
And then you had to work to get another client. Was it, after you had that first client, did you kind of have that confidence? Or were you still like in the back of your mind thinking like, okay, this is good temporarily, but I'm still going to need to look to get a job?
Well, I think once I found the second client, then at that point I was actually, with those two clients, I was making more money than I'd ever made in my life.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I had never made more than $60,000 a year before I started this business that now does 10 million. So I, you know, two clients in, I was making more money than I'd ever made. And I thought, well, this is definitely something that I could, you know, turn into something even bigger. But I was already pretty pleased with the way it was going at that point, but I didn't settle. But what I would describe my mindset and my feelings at that very beginning was what I would call productive paranoia, which is a term Jim Collins coins in a book called Good to Great. And basically what that means is the business was doing so well right from the start that I was scared shitless that it was all going to fall apart. And so I worked my butt off to make sure that I was doing everything exactly right every step of the way. And I definitely over-indexed on putting time and effort into my business and into myself, because, you know, I would work, you know, an 8 or 10 hour day, nothing crazy. I mean, there were definitely nights when, you know, my wife would bring me dinner to the office at 8 o'clock at night, and I would work until 10 or 11, but that didn't happen all the time. A lot of people like to say, oh yeah, I worked till 11 o'clock every night. You know, that's not really doable, you know,
right.
But, you know, I would go home and I would read, you know, instead of watching TV at night, I would read business books. I would read autobiographies. I would read anything that would give me any information that I might be able to use to build my business and to learn. So I was really, really focused on developing as a business owner and as a person in the very beginning. And I think that was critically important, because I didn't know how to run a multi-million dollar agency when I first started. I had to learn on the fly and as I was going along. And luckily, you know, I only signed one client at a time. And so I only had to get, you know, one client or one employee at a time, you know, smarter than I was before. If I had, you know, gone from 0 employees to 50 employees overnight, I would have been overwhelmed and couldn't have handled it. But because, you know, it took years to get to that, I was able to learn and keep up with the progress of the business. But I think that, you know, productive paranoia is what kept me in check. It kept my ego in check. You know, I never thought I had it figured out. Mm-hmm. I always felt like it would fall apart at any second, and I needed to be really, really careful because I didn't want it to fall apart. It was going great, and I was super happy.
At what point did you actually hire your first employee? Like how long since you started, and how many clients did you have at that time?
Yeah, so my first employee was a guy that just walked into my office because a teacher that I knew at a local high school had told him that I had opened a recording studio, which was not at all what I had opened. And this kid wanted to work at a recording studio. So he came in, and it turned out he was 17 years old. He knew a lot about computers. And I happened to have two computers, and I needed to network together. And I had just bought this networking card. And I said, hey, can you make these two computers work? And he said, yeah. And I said, can you do it right now? And he said, sure. And 2 hours later, he had networked my first two computers and had them work. And I said, all right, you want a job? I can pay you $6 an hour, and you know, you can work 20 hours a week. And so $120 a week, that's like what I could afford to pay the kid. And he didn't have anything else going on, so he took the job, and he and I got along really great. Well, he ended up being really important to the business because he was one of these detail guys and guys that can just figure out anything, you know? And right out of high school, he was just one of the very smart kid who would just teach himself anything. And I always had a problem with detail work and follow through and minutia. I was good at getting things started, but I would get tripped up by the minutia and just hated doing it. And he was really good at that. So whatever I started, he would finish. And my second employee, who was a guy who I knew who had gotten fired from his job and needed a job, and I paid him $10 an hour because he actually had a 4-year college degree. So, and I didn't think it was going to be a permanent thing, but fortunately he didn't find another job. And after a few months, I had gotten enough clients that I could hire him full time. But he was really good at follow through as well. And that's something important that I learned in the beginning, is that you have to figure out what your weaknesses are and hire for those weaknesses. I got lucky that the first two people that I found happened to be really good at the things that I sucked at. Right. And so it made it just incredibly gratifying because suddenly I wasn't getting tripped up by the types of things that had tripped me up in previous jobs and previous businesses, which was detail work and follow through. The incredible thing I'll tell you about the story of this first employee, and his name is Corrado Amenta, is he still works for me.
Wow.
He's been with me now for 18 years. So
that's crazy.
And he's one of our top guys here in the agency, and he's still incredible at figuring things out. And he's one of these guys that just whatever it doesn't fit into somebody else's job description, he gets it and he does it and he figures it out. He's really, you know, it's kind of insulting to call somebody a jack of all trades, but I say it about him like with the greatest amount of respect. He's the ultimate like Swiss Army knife of a human being and can figure anything out. And he's just been a real godsend for me. And I'm really proud of the fact that we've worked together literally, like, you know, since day one. He's still around. I just had lunch with him today. So
that is insane. And for him to accidentally walk into your office and end up being here, being with you throughout the whole
thing. That's awesome. In mysterious ways, huh? It was truly amazing.
So what, as you're kind of building this thing up, obviously you've come a long way from picking up those first clients to $10 million, which is crazy to think about in just a few years, really. What were some of the biggest mistakes looking back now that you wish you wouldn't have made, or that brought like a really good learning lesson for you as you're kind of building this up?
Yeah, I think the first mistake that I made, or the biggest mistake I made, was in kind of committing to being a certain kind of business in the beginning when I hadn't really figured out whether or not that was the right kind of business. And now looking back, you know, I call the first like 4 years we were in business the AFM stage, which stands for anything for money, because we basically were taking any client in marketing, because I just thought, I'm a marketing agency, we'll do marketing, and that can be any kind of marketing for any kind of client. because our focus is marketing. And that's really not a focus. That's way, 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 way too broad. And so about 4 years in, I had about 10 employees and 10 clients, and we were doing $1 million a year in business, which, believe me, I was just over the moon with doing that much business. And I thought it was incredible. But I also realized that I couldn't grow anymore because I was running around like a chicken with his head cut off. And I thought, I'll never be able to grow beyond this. And I want to keep growing, not because I'm greedy, but because I need change. You know, I get bored. I have ADD. I get bored very quickly. So if the company's not growing, then for me, it's not interesting. I also knew that to keep the employees I had to grow because I had to create opportunities for them to be able to grow. And if the business isn't growing, then you're not creating career opportunities for your employees. So the only way I was going to keep is to grow the business. And so I went home one day and I remember sitting at the dining room table and I pulled out a yellow pad and I made two lists. And this was in the middle of reading or having completed reading three books. One is Good to Great by Jim Collins, Straight from the Gut by Jack Welch, and Rockefeller Habits by Vern Harnish. And the three books that I kind of read back to back all had one common theme, and that is figure out what you can be the best at. And so when I went home and I grabbed this yellow pad and I made a list of all the clients that we were doing great work for that was not requiring me to get involved. And then a list of all the clients that we were having challenges with, which then of course I was having to get involved because, you know, we weren't that good at it. And the first list, fortunately, was 70% of our clients, and they all had one thing in common, two things in common. They were consumer tech clients, and we were doing media relations for them. So we were getting press coverage for them, and that's all we did. And I realized that 70% of the business was requiring almost 0% of my time. The other 30%, which was just a mishmash of different things, was requiring 90% of my time. And I thought, wow, I could still do 70% of our business and have nothing to do. Well, it wasn't that I wanted to do nothing. It's that then I could focus more of my time on business development, on hiring people, on systems and processes, and on developing and building the business so that I would be working on the business and not in the business. Because that's one of the key tenets to being able to build a business is that you've got to get out of working in the business and work on the business, developing that infrastructure, developing that that organization that is going to be better and smarter than you. And that was always my goal, is build a business that doesn't need me. And so, you know, I remember coming in the next day and sitting down with, you know, all my employees at the time and saying, moving forward, we are not going to take any more clients that are not consumer tech, media relations. And I was nervous about the decision at the time. I wasn't 100% sure it was the right decision, but it turned out to be the best decision I ever made, because that year, which was 2007, we grew 74%. 2008, we grew 54%. 2009, which was a terrible year for agencies and for the whole economy, we still grew 15%.
Wow.
2010, we grew 40%. So we just kept growing. Once we decided to focus on something that we could really be the best at, then we really started to grow, because then our value proposition became so strong that it didn't take long before we became the best agency in the entire country at media relations for consumer tech companies. And being the best at something makes all the difference in the world.
That is so interesting. I'm glad you brought it up, because we talked about this niching down, finding your niche, in a previous episode with Carl Hughes. And it was basically the same thing. He has a very niche topic. They do content marketing for startup in the engineer space, and they're awesome. Doing amazing. They're continuing to grow, and it was kind of the same thing. They just kind of played around.
And when you niche down that much, you can be the best in the world, right?
Exactly.
Like, they're probably the best in the world at content marketing for, you know, in the engineer space, you know, like.
But exactly what you were saying, when you were talking about like how you're having to spend 90% of your time with these clients, it just started making me think about the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, where you're spending 80% of your time on stuff that yields 20% of the results. Meanwhile, you're spending 20% of the time. Yeah. Like, all of that just totally clicks. It all makes sense.
Yeah. It was the Pareto principle in action, for sure. Yeah.
So what do you think through all of this? Obviously, you, I guess, how long were you going before you hit that $1 million mark?
It took probably four years to get to the $1 million mark. And, but from there on, I got to the $2 million mark in like another year and a half, and then the $5 million mark in like another year and a half, 2 years.
Awesome.
Yeah. So at that point, it just kept, doubling, about every year and a half to 2 years at the most.
That's when it all just kind of started clicking.
Yeah, it actually the business got easier once I started to focus and it became more fun.
Now, do you think, so obviously you had data, you had clients kind of base all this off of to find like, okay, this is what we could be really good at. Like we could be the best at this. Yeah. Do you think the fact that you had that kind of broad clientele to start helped with that? Or is it something that you would have been able to prepare yourself better for had you known that, like, I need to niche down?
I think I probably would have been able to come to the conclusion a little bit sooner had I known that I was kind of heading down the wrong road. I you're making a good point, though, in that I do think it's important to experiment in the beginning and to be open to, different ideas. And this kind of goes back to, Eric Ries and the Lean Startup. I don't know if you've read the Lean Startup, but, it's figure out what your minimum viable product is and then get customer feedback. Well, for me, it was, doing various different marketing activities, viable product. And then I was able to get feedback and see what was working and what was not working. So yeah, I absolutely think, if you're starting, what I call a professional services firm, which it could be a PR firm or a marketing firm or a content marketing firm, or it could be an accounting firm or a law firm, you can kind of start out doing a lot of different things, but with the intention of it being an experiment to see what's clicking and what's really working for you. See, for me, it wasn't even based on what I was great at. What I found is, that employee number two that I talked about, his name was Ted. He happened to be a really good salesman. And I found out, because he handled our first PR client, that salespeople are great at doing media relations, because it's calling up the media on the phone and getting them to write about products. And so that ability to sell really came through when it came to media relations, because people who went to school for PR, they weren't showing them how to bang the phones. They're showing them how to do PR strategy and how to write press releases. Well, what the clients really needed was somebody who could bang the phones and get them coverage. And that's what this guy was really, really good at. Mm-hmm. And so I discovered that if I just hired more salespeople, that they would really just run circles around, your typical PR person, especially in the beginning when we were working with a lot of small companies that just needed, the real value. And so that was something that I only could have discovered if I was experimenting the way that I did. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of go after that. So when I started, if you would have told me, oh, one day you're going to have a, $10 million PR agency that focuses on consumer tech companies, I would have said, you're crazy. I don't even know anything about
that. What does that mean?
But exactly. But that's kind of where, the data took me, and you just have to be open and optimistic and believe that there's, Peter Thiel in his book, I'm mentioning a lot of books today, but Zero to One talks about secrets. And he says, that entrepreneurs believe that there are secrets that have yet to be uncovered. And I live that way every day. I believe that there's something I don't know yet today that if I discover it is going to make my life better tomorrow. And so I go into my business with that kind of attitude of like, what am I going to discover today that's going to unlock some success that I hadn't thought of up until now? Because there's always something new, right?
Yeah.
And it's all about finding what that new thing is. And that new thing is a secret until we discover it. And there's a lot of them. There's enough to go around. You don't have to be the guy that discovered the idea of Uber or Airbnb or Google. Like, there's millions and millions and billions and trillions of great ideas out there. And if you're just optimistic and open to the concept of there being these secrets that are there for you to uncover, then you will uncover them and they will pay off for you.
That's awesome. I really love that. There are secrets to uncover. As I mentioned before, I'm going to rattle off a bunch of books throughout this interview so far. So I will be putting all of those in the show notes. I can already tell that my reading list is growing by the minute here. So awesome. I appreciate that. That's awesome. So, okay, let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about how the listeners themselves can really start taking action based on the stuff that you've learned. What do you think is the most important thing we need to understand when we're trying to scale a business from like an early stage?
So there's a couple things that I'll say, you know, when start with starting a business. You know, I know people who will talk about a business they want to start or an idea that they have, and then they never act on it. And I think they don't act on it because they're afraid of failure. Well, they haven't even started, right? And so they don't even do any research. They don't even do any like side hustle work. You know, when what's the name of the guy that started Reed Hastings that started Netflix? Okay, he had the idea for Netflix, but he didn't just go and like start Netflix. He thought, I wonder if I can mail DVDs in an envelope without a case through the U.S. mail without them getting damaged. Have you heard this story? And what he did is he went to the store. This is before he started the business, before he told anybody that he wanted to start the business. He went to the store and he bought 3 CDs and he put them into envelopes and he mailed them to himself. And when he received them, they were not damaged. And so that was his preliminary research to determine whether or not Netflix would work. And most people would have stopped before that. They would have stopped at the, I don't even know if I could even send DVDs without them getting broke.
Right.
Well, what does it cost to just check? Like, he spent a few bucks and he was able to confirm the one thing that he didn't know. You know what I mean? It's like, just go take those steps. What if the DVDs would have shown up broken? Would he have failed? Would he have been a failure? No, he wouldn't have been a failure. He just would have realized that wasn't a good idea, you know, and maybe there was a different direction for his life and for his business. So I think when you have an idea, just take the first step, do some research, like feel it out, figure it out, see if it's something that can be done, educate yourself, do the things that you take those first steps to see if it really is, you know, a doable idea. And if you're afraid to like quit your day job to go and do it, then do it as a side hustle. You know, I mean, that's why God invented nights and weekends, you know, it's so that you can do this. It's worth it, you know, and you've got to make that sacrifice of putting in the extra time and effort to figure out if an idea is going to work. And, you know, if you're lucky, you can get your side hustle going to a point where it's making you as much money, or at least you've got it going far enough that it doesn't feel like a risk to start a business. Like, I don't recommend that you go, I've got an idea, so I'm just going to quit my job tomorrow and start on this idea. No, like do some things to confirm whether or not that really is a good idea, whether it is going to be doable, whether it can get some traction. And then once you get some momentum going, then it becomes easier for you to quit your day job because you've got enough evidence that it's actually going to work. And so it shouldn't really be that difficult of a decision to quit your day job by the time you get it to that point. You know what I mean? So the other question you asked was about scaling, you know, a business. And I think that, you know, to scale a business, it's really about just one, know what your weaknesses are and hire for those weaknesses. You know, the fortunate thing about, you know, life, which is very, very different from say school, is you go to school and, you know, you get 4 A's, 2 B's and a D on your report card. And what do they tell you? Oh, you got to work on bringing up that D, right? No, that's not life. You really should be working on the things that you're getting A's in. You know, you should be working on your strengths, right? And get somebody else to do the stuff that you get D's in, because you're obviously not good at that. And you're not going to be good at everything in life. You're not going to like doing everything. In some people like doing some things more than others. And you want to put yourself in a position where you're doing, spending more of your day doing the things that you like and less of your day doing the things that you don't like. And believe me, there are people out there who love to do the things that you hate. And there are also people who would hate to do the things that you like. And so you got to team up with people who complement your strengths and weaknesses in a way that, you know, the two are greater than the, you know, than the whole. So, you know, I like to say 1 + 1 = 3. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. That's something I've been thinking very heavily about with the podcast as a whole, because there are a lot of parts of the, like, obviously the interviews. I love doing the interviews. I love chatting with people, but then the work to pull the interview together with the editing and doing the video and the show notes and all that stuff. I mean, it's stuff I don't really enjoy doing, but it's a part of the process. So it's something I've been really looking at as far as like being able to outsource and start hiring for some of those things. So I can focus on getting the interviews, focus on talking and meeting new people. Like, that's what I enjoy with the whole process. So I absolutely love what you're saying.
Yeah. And what you'll find is that'll make you so much more efficient, because when you spend more time doing what you're great at and less time doing what you're not so great at, your productivity goes through the roof. Your happiness goes through the roof. Your motivation goes through the roof, and you don't feel like you're working anymore. It's just like you're just having fun because you're just doing the stuff you love.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So now how much money do we actually need to get this thing started? Like, if we want to start a business, we obviously need money, right?
I love that question. You don't need any money. Like, it obviously depends on the business that you're going to start. But if you're going to start a professional services firm, a marketing firm, a PR firm, an accounting firm, a law firm, you don't need a dime, because you can start the business from your home with your laptop. And if you're listening to this podcast, you at least have a phone or a laptop already, right? So you've already got the equipment that you need to start the job. You know, I got my first client and I was working from home. And then when I got my second client, I got an office that I could afford to pay for with the money that I was making. And I, like I said, I bought this crappy, used, junky furniture. Now, some people go, oh yeah, but I got to have a new MacBook because I want to impress clients, and I have to have a nice office because I have to, like, you know, fake it till I make it. And clients are going to come and it's like, I didn't bring clients to my office, you know, when I first started out. I went to go see them, you know. I wasn't going to let a client come into my office. It was a shithole, you know. But I also wanted to make money, and I've made money every single month for 19 years. And I've never taken a penny of debt, never had a penny of credit card debt, never had to borrow any money. And you can do that if you are just careful and smart about how you spend your money every step of the way, because it's like, my first employee was a part-time employee. Some people go, oh, you got to have money to hire people. Not if you hire somebody part-time, you know, to help you out. And then if you get, every time I got more client work, then I would take a little bit of the money from each new client and apply that to labor. So then I could make the part-time person, you know, work a few more hours, and then eventually full-time, and then hire another part-time person, and then increase their hours, and then hire another part-time person. And then eventually I was big enough where I could hire people, you know, full-time right from the beginning, because there was enough, you know, wiggle room in there financially to bring people on. But you can absolutely do that. And then the same thing with, you know, office space. You know, it's like I had this little tiny office that had two rooms. Well, I had five people working in there before we moved to the next office space, you know, and then I moved into, you know, and I always did short-term leases because I didn't know how long before I grew out of that space. And I didn't want to get too big of a space because I don't want to pay for space that I didn't need at the moment. So, you know, I got short-term leases. You know, I was very frugal with, you know, how much money I spent on furniture and things like that. And, you know, you gotta just watch your expenses, but you absolutely can start and build and scale a professional services business with no money.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's really interesting because you hear all the time, like, when you start making money from your business, it should be reinvested back into your business, but it's a matter of where are you reinvesting that money? And with everything that you're doing, it's very evident that you were reinvesting it in hiring more people. So it wasn't necessarily as much of the biggest thing you hear is the ad spend, like spending money on more ads or more marketing in that aspect. But it seems like a lot of what you were making was going back to hire more help. That was where the majority of your returns were going. Is that somewhat accurate?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And as the agency started growing, then I was able to spend more of my time doing business development and bringing in more clients. And then eventually, probably 4 or 5 years in, I hired a full-time business development person to help bring in clients because we were finally doing enough business that I could absorb, you know, the cost of somebody doing that. And today I've got 4 people on our business development team, and I haven't done sales for the business in 10 years now. That's all done by the business development team. So yeah, as you grow, you get to kind of fire yourself or hire yourself out of the jobs that become, you know, too big for you, or you start to bottleneck. And that's, I guess, another thing to think about is, you know, the worst enemy to a business growing is the leader. And so you have to know how to get out of the way. And so as the business starts growing and certain parts of the business, maybe it's invoicing, or maybe it's payroll, or maybe it's hiring, or maybe it's biz dev, or it could be any of these things. Once any of those areas starts to get so big that you're not really driving it forward in a productive way anymore, then you've got to hire people to help you with that particular job. And I remember the first time I hired a full-time bookkeeper, I didn't really need a full-time bookkeeper. But it was going to be hard for me to find. I needed somebody who was really going to learn the business and be there. And so I hired this bookkeeper. I remember he cost me $50,000 a year. But what I didn't realize is how much time I'd been spending doing payroll myself and doing invoicing and things like that. And as soon as I hired him, I was able to shift all that work to him. Even though he was probably underworked, the value that it gave me, because I was able to shift all that time toward business development and growing the business, ended up paying off. So I was thinking about it the wrong way. I was thinking about how much am I paying that person for the work that we're doing, and not how much of my time am I freeing up that's allowing me to bring greater value to the business. And that's what made, you know, a huge difference. And that was a great, you know, learning experience for me along the way, is that, you know, you've got to hire yourself out of jobs so that you can kind of keep, you know, elevating yourself as the builder of the business.
Right. No, I absolutely love that, because I mean, like I said, you always hear all the time, reinvesting into marketing, reinvesting into ad spend, trying to get more exposure. But if you think about it, you need to be reinvesting to grow the business. And by hiring people, you're able to, again, take yourself out of that equation and focus on something else that is going to actually help grow the business, not just like maintain or gain more exposure necessarily, but actually grow and develop the business.
Yeah. And what happens in the end, Nick, is you get to a point, which is where I'm at now, is that I have hired myself out of so many jobs that there's none left. And so the business essentially runs itself, and I don't have to do it anymore. I got a management team that runs the business, that does a brilliant job. They're growing the business. The business is thriving. And all I do is, you know, 4 or 5 status meetings in various different departments, just so that I know what's going on each week. And that's it. And it gives me time to do other things, like spend time with my family or write books or do podcasts with you, things like that.
Yeah. I love it, man. That's so cool. I'm happy for you, man. But speaking of books, so you have a book, and it's a pretty fun one. It's How to Be Fan-Fucking-Tastic. So why don't you fill us in a little bit as we start wrapping up the show here. What is this book about, and why should the listeners go grab it?
Yeah, so it's 100-plus pages of practical advice on how to stop sucking at life and start being fan-fucking-tastic. And, you know, throughout my life, I've had many, many mentors and various people that have helped me become, you know, I guess as successful as I am, whatever that you think that is. And one day I just started writing down some various quotes, that's like principles and ideas and things that, you know, I live by, and that kind of drive my thinking and drive my, my life, and put them into writing. And I kind of put it together into a little like Word document and shared it with some friends. And they thought it was great. So I put it together, you know, I kept working on it, came up with 120 quotes that, you know, guide my life and put them into a book form. And that's the book, How to Be Fan-Fucking-Tastic, which is available on Amazon. And it's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's the kind of book that you can pick up each day and just read a couple of quotes and remind yourself of some things that maybe you hadn't thought of. And, you know, hopefully help make your life a little bit better.
Awesome. Like all the other links, I will put that in the show notes for this episode as well. So make sure you grab a copy. I just love saying it. A copy of Fan-Fucking-Tastic. I haven't got my hands on it yet, but I am excited to start picking through that. I think that's an awesome idea.
Thanks,
man.
Nick.
Well, okay. So as we wrap up here, any final words of advice, words of wisdom that you want to leave the listeners with as we kind of wrap up?
You know, I think it's that, you know, remember that life is an open book test. And that's one of the quotes in the book. And, you know, in school, you've got to learn and memorize everything. And then when test time comes, like if you don't know it, you fail. But that's not how life works. Life gives you challenges and life is a test, but you can open the book and find the answers. And so if you don't know how to do something, if you don't know the answer, if you're being challenged with something, go find a book that's going to help you through it. Because just about any challenge that you're experiencing, anything you want to overcome, anything you want to accomplish, you can get help from a book. You know, everybody, every successful person out there just about has written a book. We're so fortunate. And there's so much information available on the internet that you'd be silly not to look for it. So, you know, read every day and, you know, keep feeding your mind good stuff. And, you know, over time, it's just going to build and build and build.
I love it. And as Max said earlier in the episode, don't just read the books, but take action from what you're learning. Start putting those ideas and those thoughts into action. Start creating something, because the sooner you get started, the sooner you get feedback, the sooner you can start making things happen. But it all starts with getting that knowledge and starting to take action. So Max, this has been a blast. Where can people go find you online? Where do you want people to go if they want to get in touch with you or see what you're working on? What links, URL, social media?
Sure. They can go to maxborges.com. That's my personal website. Or they can go to maxborgesagency.com to see the what's going on with the agency. And yeah, those are the two best places to find me.
Awesome, man. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You shared so much awesome information with me and the listeners today. I just had a blast chatting with you and hearing your story and everything you got going on, man. It's been a blast.
It was great. Thank you, Nick. I had a great time.
I absolutely love that interview with Max. The whole idea of hiring early and hiring for your weaknesses is so simple, but it's so freaking smart. Why not start hiring employees as early as possible? By hiring for your weaknesses, you're only turning your business into a more efficient, well-oiled machine. Plus, like Max said, hiring out puts more time back into your hands so you can focus on doing the things that really matter most for growing your business. Now, throughout the interview, Max mentioned a lot of really great books, including his own book, How to Be Fan-Fucking-Tastic. So if you want the links to any of those books mentioned in this episode, or you want to check out what Max and his agency are up to, make sure you visit the show notes for this episode. The show notes can be found at 95podcast.com/episode57. And if you've not visited the website before, just make sure your 95 is all spelled out. That's NINEFIVE podcast.com/episode57. Well, that wraps up the episode for today. If you haven't left a review of the 9-5 podcast yet, let me know how I'm doing. I left a link in the description of this episode, and it takes you directly to iTunes, and from there you can leave a review of the show. I'd love to know what you think, and your reviews actually help make the podcast grow. So go in there, leave a review, let me know what you think. I'd love to hear what you wrote. Well, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. Stay safe, and I will catch you guys in next week's interview.